Welcome, everybody, to this episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech experts and leaders from all around the world to share their insights and expertise so that we can all grow and prosper within our businesses. This episode, I'm extremely pleased to have Brian Strong, where today we're going to be talking about things that you may not know, what's the difference between growing and scaling your company, and letting go. How do we let go within our business and still let it fly? So we've got loads of things to talk about today. So please make sure you've got pen and paper or however you're taking notes, and because this is really going to be a great one. But without further ado, Brian, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Why don't we start off by giving us a little bit about your history? How did you get started in tech and where you are today?
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for having me too, Gary. So yeah, I've been in the tech industry since about 2004. I was in the telecom business a little bit before that, and that can be pseudo tech, but it was reselling POTS lines. And I got recruited by a service provider in my area to come over there to do sales. And I've always had kind of like a techie mind, but I don't have a techie background. So once I got into MSP, it really made sense. So, I just fell in love with the industry and helping people and doing all that. And then the MSP that I was with grew to be one of like the top 10 MSPs in the country for pure play MSPs at the time. And so during that, I learned a lot about the whole technical, how to speak to business leaders. I have a business mind, running businesses, how do business owners think. The financial side of it, really understanding that. I had a finance background, and that was my education, I was a major in finance. So I kind of understood of like how to speak to those business owners and leaders about the technical side and lean on those technical resources to help me. I had a good run at Claris Networks, and then I had an entrepreneurial bend to me. So about 6.5 years into it, I sold the biggest account that I ever had, broke my leg severely. The surgery, plates and screws, on pain medication. And I was thinking very clearly, of course. And I said, I love Claris. I love the MSP space, but I'm ready to try something on my own. I started a software as a service company called Vendor Registry, which primarily focused on the public procurement space, on the vendor registration. The big problem that we saw was that you had to register for a business. You had to register at each little entity in all different information, all this other stuff. The governments had a big issue of keeping their databases clean because the vendor would register once and then information would change and they couldn't update it. So we were the first people that had a centralized database for all governments to use on our platform, where if the vendor updated their information with one government, all the governments in the whole network got it. So it was a revolutionary advancement in that space. We got bought by the number two company in that space. And then I got recruited to come back into the MSP space where I'm at now at 10 Hats. It was a company that was underwater, frankly. A lot of their business processes were broken. And so basically had to turn that around from a business standpoint. It was losing money to now that we're making money. We've had over the last 4 years, it's like 650% growth in the business. And so we've had a wild success doing that. And so it's been a lot of fun. So that's kind of my tech industry background.
Great. Thanks for sharing that, Russ, Brian. And there's a couple of things I want to dive back into in a bit, like how you came from outside the tech industry to where you are now. But I just want to, just whilst it's hot, and on everybody's mind while they're listening, that is 600-odd% difference and growth from a company that was already underwater. It was already struggling. You said that's what it looked like when you first did. And then when you stepped in over the last few years, you managed to change that. What would you credit to be the most significant factors behind that transformation? Because anyone listening here is going to go, what? I can't even get 65% in the last couple of years, let alone 650%. What things did you put in place that really are simple stuff that people could actually put in, who are listening, thinking, maybe I should start implementing some of that stuff?
Yeah. So, there was a couple of different things. One was a sales process. We didn't have a sales process put in place, and there was discipline. We had a lot of techie people in positions of quoting and making decisions from the business standpoint, which they're great techs, fantastic techs. terrible business people. And so then we started really looking at the financials of it. You know, how, where are we making money? What are the utilization factors? So it was a lot of going back into the metrics of it. And then the biggest secret to it, which is not a real big secret, is you recruit really good people and let them do what they do. So, you know, I recruited back the CTO of Claris Networks, who's one of the best operators, you know, in our business from that standpoint. And it was one of those that I hired that person that was really good at that, and I let them do it. And so kind of give them guardrails and let them run. And it was other people that I recruited back that they have specialties in certain areas. And I told one of the people that I recruited back first for, you know, a key position, you know, where we're going back out into the space, I was like, hey, we've got two rules. It's really kind of, you know, you can boil it down to many more rules. I was like, hey, we got to like the person. We got to have a role for them. Right. And what it means is that the role is fits. We're not just hiring people that we like and maybe are talented, but can they do the work that we need done, especially in the situation that we were in, because we didn't have time to train someone. Right. And so once you put the person in place, they knew what they do. They executed on it. You gave them the, you know, the rope to go out there and do what they needed to do. And then you just kind of shepherded along.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic piece of advice, which, you know, is so simple. And I think I know in the next sort of 20, 25 minutes, Brian, that we're going to be talking a lot of simple stuff that when people hear it, they're going to go, God, why am I not doing that? Because it really is such simple stuff. You know, when we were talking off camera before, you know, that there's so much of this stuff that, as I said, we know what we know, but we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes we're just blindly going through things thinking that's the way it's always been done and that's the way we should do it. And what you brought, and this is why I want to sort of dive a little bit deeper into it. Tech and our industry, our whole industry of tech, is predominantly what I call tech-led. It's founder-led. This is how it's been done. This is the tech part. And we truly believe that if we build it, it will come, because we can't stand behind product or service that isn't great. So we believe that this product is so great that people will naturally come. But what you took was an outside of a tech approach and looked at a business-led approach as opposed to a tech-led approach to start building and scaling that business. What advice or insights could you share with us about, for people who not necessarily have a business history, but pure tech history, what advice can you give them of how to step back a little bit and look at it slightly different in order to gain that traction again to get going?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different things that I would give advice on. From one is, like, do you have somebody in your business that you can rely on that does have a business background, right? And let them lead in that kind of area. And then too, from just a, from a business standpoint, know your financials. I mean, like, really dig deep into what they are. Your labor is your biggest expense. So where's your labor going? How are people, you know, where's that time going? You know, making sure that, one of the things that we really talk about is making sure that technology matches the business. There's our, typically, one of the things they want to do is over-engineer for, you know, the future, right? You know, it's really matching with them up with them now, right? From that standpoint, or for the next just few years. And so sometimes they buy, you know, overbuy because they get a special discount. Well, can you ever even use the whole capacity of that piece of equipment or that technology that you're using, you know, in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, or buy something now or use something now that you can use for the next three years. And if your business grows, go to that next level up. So it's really matching the business, your customers, and in the technology for where it is right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are some of the pieces of advice. I know we've had conversation around that before.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I think KPIs, you know, knowing what your numbers are, extremely important. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, certainly from what I see, and this is why I love sharing and chatting people like yourselves and experts to give these insights. You know, I was having a conversation with someone earlier today and talking about KPIs within the tech industry. And it seems to be, certainly from the people that I've been talking to, out there that they see it as very linear. So here's my lead generation, as it were, and here's my sales, and it's just that one line. But we all know there's different aspects to that. What a lead to a prospect to a demo to a sales call to conversion. There's so many of those metrics just in that, from lead generation to clients. Those have to be broken down from a business perspective and knowing where you're leaving money on the table.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's, you know, and it's, like you said, it's multifaceted, right? So being able to see all that, and it's not black or white, you know, there's lots of shades of gray. And how do we, you know, find the story inside of those KPIs that will tell us actually what is going on and not letting it go? Because I mean, it's one of those things is from a, you know, business standpoint is just the nickels and dimes that you're missing are point or two that go back to your, you know, go to your net profit, right? And that point or two to your net profit, I mean, that could be a game changer for a small business.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and there's a lot of companies out there within the space who, whether they like it or not, there is a major majority, in fact, for me, too high of a percentage of businesses out there in the industry who are just getting by. They're just getting by and paying payroll and just keeping that the lights on, and they're struggling to, or they've plateaued and can't break that ceiling, when effectively, if it was just a couple of percentage on improvement upon this, a couple of percentage on their conversion, a couple of percentage on, you know, getting a little bit more of the call, that could make, as you said, such a dramatic difference to their bottom line.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I don't remember one thing that we were talking about too is, I mean, there's this like entrepreneurial journey too of like these tech businesses as they go. You know, they've started this, any business owner, frankly, you know, especially if you're doing a startup. You know, we've both been through this, is that, you know, there's a lot of your self-worth wrapped up in this business that you've created. And, you know, when you start the business, you have to do everything because you're it. And so and you get to this point where you have a lot of identity in doing all these certain tasks, right? And so as you continue to grow, one of those things is you got to figure out what you're really good at. Where do you bring the most value to the company, and start shedding those different roles? Now, you start shedding those roles, a lot of people have identity crisis because they're losing what they feel is a responsibility that they had in the past. And my self-worth is in doing those tasks, which, you know, if you want a small business and you want to keep it small, you stay there. But yes, if you can break through and start releasing those, it takes a while too. It's not an easy path. But once you break through that other side and you can say, I've hired someone, they're much better at doing this certain role than I am. And we have gained, and I've gotten to free up all that time to focus more on the things that I'm better at, the company starts to scale, you start to improve. And even in those areas that you know, they're doing it better. And that's part of the leadership too, is identifying that and then hiring that person. And you should get credit for, you know, putting this in place because you've established that they're better at doing this. That's part of being a true leader and truly start to grow a business and really scale a business.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think this is a great point within our call now to talk about the difference between growing and scaling, you know, because there's a lot of people who just misunderstand the difference between those two worlds, you know. So growth, we've seen some tremendous growth within our industry. You know, we've seen some fantastic unicorns out there, but we do see some great growth. But growing and scaling are two different things. Growing is very much, and this is the insights that I get from my clients out there and other leaders that I talk to, is that even up to 10, the average now to 10 to 15 million is founder-led sales. They're still the ones doing the deals. They're the ones still out there shaking the hands and being that face to get the contract over that line, you know, all the way up to 15 million, which might surprise people, because I've also talked to people who are at 3, 4, 5 million and thinking, oh, I can't wait to hand that off to somebody, yet you've got other people at 15 million still doing it. Some people think that's wrong, you know, that they should have handed off earlier. My view on this, and I'll get your view in a minute, Brian, but my view on this is that's fine. But as you quite rightly said, Ryan, you know, if you're good at it and you like taking that over the line, it's still taking up your time. And if you can get somebody that can take over that role and except they might be better at you at this, but they might even be just 80% as good as you. But as long as they're 80%, 70, 80% as good as you, the time, like you said, Brian, that now frees you up to be that person, and now you can look at it to work on the business. We've all heard that phrase, work on the business, not in the business. But too many of us founders are working in it all the time, and they're too scared to let go. What insights could you share with us about that and how they could take those first few steps about letting go?
Yeah, that's a good point. So like when we're talking about like shedding those roles and all, you know, and when you hire somebody in to take that role, right? I think it's a perfect, you know, are they going to do it like you do it? No, right? You know, if they do 80%, like we talked about this, if they do 80%, you know, of how you would do it, but they come to the same conclusion, it's fine. Let it go. I mean, move on. You know, it's meeting all the expectations that you should want. They're never going to do it like you are because they aren't you. They're them, right? And so part of that too is like, you know, that other time you can devote it towards other things. Maybe you are really good at sales. I mean, I'm, you know, that was my first love, and I still get involved a little bit, but very little. And my whole goal was to get somebody to do this where I don't have to be involved, and they bring me along because they just want me to be involved, right? And so that's part of that leadership of growing in that, because then I can take comfort in that's doing something else. Then I can work on the vision of where we're moving, the industry trends, and spend my time there. But yeah, it's very critical. I run into a lot of entrepreneurs that are trying to let go, but they're like, they don't do it like I do. And I'm like, they're not going to do it like you do. But if they do 80%, leave it alone. If it's anything above that, that's great. If it's below that, you can coach them, but you know, but don't let good get in the way of perfect, right?
Yeah, exactly. The perfection is the thief of joy, I think, perfection, trying to get perfect. And yes, we understand that, like you quite rightly said, if you come from a tech background, you were an engineer first, and then you grew to be the owner of your company, whatever, you have this tendency to over-engineer, and that you want everything to be absolutely right. You want all the green lights to be green before you take anything. But what you're missing out on is all the time level. So if someone could do 70, 80% of you, but they're doing it 100% of their time, as a founder, you're already, as you well know with the name of your company, you're wearing so many hats anyway. So by releasing one role, getting contracts over the line or whatever, or other, that gives you more time to build your brand. It gives you more time to be the authority in your business, which now creates more time. And we're going to talk about this a little bit later on, and so, but I just want to mention it right now. For founders out there who have an inkling or a thought about scaling their business to exit, your business and your enterprise will be worth far more money if you are not the linchpin and not the kingpin right there every single day. If people are going to look at your business, they want to take over that business without you, because if they can run it without you, then they'll pay more for it. If they can't run it without you, then really that's not something worth really investing in, because you're too valuable. So yes, you're valuable, but you need to get out. That's you need to get out of the way.
I mean, do you want to build the value in you, or do you want to build the value in your company? Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, if you want to exit, you want all that value to be in your company.
Yes.
Yeah, part of it too, it goes back to quality of life. You know, I mean, it's, you know, the more you build these structures in place, your quality of life goes up because it's more predictable. You know, it's not so chaotic. I mean, the amount of decisions that we have to make every day, and the more you add to it, if you're the linchpin on all those, it's mentally taxing from that, and that it drives your focus from what it really should be focused on.
Yeah. And then you're capping your growth again, and it goes right back to that circle about if it's just you and your team, and it's unscalable then. You know, you can grow to a certain level, but you will hit that glass ceiling. And until you can step away and start letting go and then let them fly, as it were. And I know you and I had this discussion before. Get it 70, 80% right. Let it fly from there on in, right?
That's exactly right.
You then grow from there. So let's talk about letting things fly. But before they can fly, they need to be seen. So in a crowded market, you're an MSP market. In the US alone, there's over 40,000 MSPs.
That's correct.
How have you positioned your company to not only stand above the noise so that people get noticed, but to do such dramatic growth in there? What is the big differentiator, would you say, that you are now doing that says, hey, there's all of those, but there is just me, or there is just us?
Well, yeah, thanks for the question. You know, I think it's really the business approach to it is that we understand how businesses operate. What are their goals and their initiatives that they're trying to achieve? If you're a PE-backed firm, your goals are a whole lot different than if you're trying to build a long, sustainable family business, right? So catering to those different types of businesses to help them achieve their goals makes a big difference. Really matching up with the, you know, with the goals, the achievements, all those. But then part of it too is the way we've structured the company too is we have a lot of specialists on staff. And so the 10 hats basically is like emblematic of all the 10 different functions of IT that we serve. And so it's like one of those, we have these specialists in these different areas that can help even larger enterprises that may not have that staff. You know, they may be proficient in 6 of the 10. Well, those other 4 are something that 10 hats can help them fulfill, right? And so being able to go up market and work with larger organizations has been a big differentiator for us. But that also has to do with like the company structure, the company culture of being that real business focus and trying to figure out what those customer needs are and fill in those gaps. For a lot of the MSPs out there, you know, 85% of them are under $3 million and they're serving, you know, what we call like, you know, really small businesses from 100 users and below. And that's a good business. I mean, it's a fine business, but they usually hit that 3 million mark. And that's where that leader, it kind of hit taps out where they are and they have that up. They'll go up a little bit and they'll go down. They'll go up a little bit and down. And that's where they really need to start looking at how do you really scale out? And that's usually additional management team. And it doesn't have to be a lot of people, but a couple of good team members in key positions or leave the entrepreneur, the owner of a significant amount of pressure. And then, you know, the strongest one, you know, I recommend is getting good finances, really understanding what that is, making sure all your GL codes, you know, where your money is going, how you're spending, you know, how you make money, the profitability of each account that you have and making sure that you're servicing them. One of the things too, is their ticket count goes up for that small business. They're probably unhappy as a client if they're calling you a lot. So it's like one of those, it's an indicator of health of the organization itself too.
Yeah, absolutely. So you hit a really good point there, Brian, which I want to just dial it back a little bit on there. And you said, quite right, getting to the million, it always seems to be the first level that the companies get to, the MSP, especially MSPs and VARs, is getting to that million. Then they've got that 3 to 5 million cap where they bobble along for, you know, it's almost like they're hitting it and come back down, hitting it and come, like, almost like the flea syndrome, you know, they're hitting it and come back down again. And then if they can break the 5 and get to 10 and 15. But you're quite right. Once you got to one of the key aspects of being able to push past that is becoming that authority within the marketplace and not just the player. You know, you don't want to be competing as an expert. The world is full of experts. You want to be dominating as the authority. How have you utilized things like authority building tools like podcasting and speaking to put you above everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those. I mean, I love doing podcasts like this and just getting out that, you know, that our clients or other MSPs, I'm very passionate about the MSP space and helping other MSP entrepreneurs grow their business, but also too, from the standpoint of from our businesses is that I peer with a lot of the business owners that we serve, the CFOs or the CEOs, and we talk about our different businesses and how they operate. And through that, they actually have an authority that I'm not just trying to sell them IT services. I'm really trying to help them run that organization. And you know, we help each other from a standpoint of collaboration. And it's actually fun that a lot of these folks become friends, I mean, and they're confidants from that standpoint. And I think that's where that authority comes in from. Hey, they're not just looking at how IT is run. It's how's the whole organization operating, you know, and getting into the operations and how the finances and how to evaluate how when they do technology spend or any type of spend. I mean, a lot of those principles proliferate throughout the organization. They deal with HR. I deal with HR. You know, I mean, they have accountants. I have accountants. They have marketing. I have marketing. So, I mean, there's a lot of, collaboration from that. And there's a lot of similarities that we have from that standpoint. So that's where I'm
I think there's another avenue to that, which is very similar to what you said there. And actually, the symbiotic of it is pure partnership now. Rather than just being the commodity provider, you're actually being part. There's a lot of growth there in choosing correct partners. And, you know, it's obviously very close to my heart, because that's exactly what we do, is going in there and acting as a partner to somebody to grow the whole business, not just be that service provider, not just be that consultant, but to be this holistic partner and say, hey, let's grow together from doing what can I do to help you grow your business? And we'll do that and grow. So those partnerships is not just about deal brokering. It's the whole aspect of building it, of helping build a business.
And the authenticity of it too, from when you know, if you have business struggles, everybody has business struggles. You get into any of them, and they all have like problems that they're trying to fix, right? So just breaking down that barrier just a little bit and just saying, hey, here's some of the things that we're working on. We're not great at this area. This is a focus for us for the next year. And they'll open up and share what their struggles are too. And it's,
yeah,
they don't feel, you know, and it is a true partnership, but, you know, part of that is taking that first step of humbling yourself a little bit and just kind of sharing with them of like, here's the areas that we want to grow, or we are growing. How can I help you grow? I've had that experience. You know, those are the conversations you can have, and they'll give you experiences about what they've done with their struggles too. So it is a true partnership, but it usually leads, you know, starts with you being a little bit of the vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a big difference again between being the expert and being an authority. An expert is always trying to show how clever they are, whereas an authority can allow themselves to be humbled because they're already at the top of their space, whereas an expert is all trying to prove their space.
That's exactly right. And so, like, one of the things, you know, people have asked, you know, clients or whatever, they're like, so what's been the key to your success? You have the magic formula. I'm like, no, like, we don't have the magic formula. What we do know from our last experience is what not to do. So we're not making the same mistakes that we made in the past. We may be making brand new ones, but at least we're avoiding those ones that we've already done. And so that,
yeah,
you know, even avoiding those has helped us be more successful, you know, this time.
Yeah. And I think, again, you know, it's tremendous. It surprises me that amount of people who look at successful companies or look at rapid growth and say, wow, you must do nothing wrong. You must have put every foot right in order for you to get to where you are. But it's not. It's falling and falling fast, learning from it. Don't step on that landmine again.
That's exactly right. It is like, yeah, that's right. I mean, cars are still there, right? So it's just, you know, but no, it is falling, you know, and getting up faster and like going, hey, you know what? We can recover from this. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now let's talk about recovery, because in a world, you've had rapid growth and there'll be people listening here and people watching and thinking, yeah, that's all well and good, Brian, but you know, I don't want to forget where I came from. I don't want to forget the clients who got me to where I am today, you know, and if we're growing and growing and growing, don't they just become numbers as opposed to clients? How do you balance rapid growth with keeping clients feeling valued that, you know, that they're out there?
No, and that's a wonderful question. And it is, you know, really taking a concerted effort at doing that. And that's hiring staff. You know, one of the reasons in the rapid growth and why we're continuing to grow, there's two facets of it. One, we do want to take care of our clients. And we're actually potting out our organization so that each customer will have, you know, each part of our staff will have like primary customers that they focus on, because we want to keep that relationship close to that client. Now they'll be able to use any of the resources inside the company for expertise, but we dedicate a certain amount of staff to a certain client to keep that relationship going. And that's something that you have to get to a certain level for that actually to function. And we felt that over the last year, and that's a modification that we're making this year. But then also too, one of the reasons why we want to grow and continue to grow is redundancy and resiliency inside of our organization. You know, too many of the small businesses out there, and we were there, you have single points of failure, you have the best tech, you know, and he can fix anything, right? But he's a single point of failure. And that guy is on call 24/7, 365, you know, and, you know, his quality of life isn't where it should be or what I want them to live. I want them, you know, it's very important to me that when my staff goes on vacation, they don't get a call. I don't want them getting a call. I want them to be on vacation. I want them to relax. You know, in IT, you know, we have to work 24/7. You know, we have to work at night, but you don't have to work at night all the time. So one of the things is building resiliency in each team, that in every department that we at least have three people. We're not quite there yet. We have redundancy in each position. But that's one thing that we want to achieve. So somebody can go on vacation, the other person can pick up their roles or tasks, and we don't miss a beat. The customers don't feel it. You know, so that's part of the reason why we want to grow. But it is very important. So in the last MSP that we worked at, we went into multi-state, multi-location. We did feel the breakdown. We did feel where customers started becoming numbers. And so that is one of the things that we're very intentional. That was a mistake we made in the past. Or we perceive it as a mistake.
Yeah. Well, it's a landmine, isn't it? It's you've got to learn whether it's a mistake, either you see it as a mistake or not a mistake. Are you learning from it? Does it take you further in the right direction? It's not just further about numbers. It's not just further about acquisition. Is it taking you in where you actually want this to go? You know, and it's that round robin. It's going back round again and said, okay, if you wanted to sell this and you wanted it, and I know not all founders out there want to sell.
That's right.
And they want to exit. I understand that. But ultimately, even if you wanted to raise finances, it must be a valuation. And if the valuation is based upon what SOPs you have in place, what can you hand down that's from the top down, where everyone, if someone's removed from it, it's not going to come down like a house of cards, right?
And one of the things I always tell like entrepreneurs like that is like they go, we're never going to sell. And like, we don't have any plan to sell, right? But all businesses come to an end. They all sell at some point, either to the, even if it's to the next generation, they sell, right? And so it's like, if you don't prepare your business to be sold, if you have no intentionality of selling it, but you still need to have all those, you should still build it to so that it could be done without you, because it will sell at some point.
Yeah.
When you're 65 and want to retire. Well, how are you going to retire if the whole business is centered around you? Right. So you know, preparing now, you get the quality of life. You get to build, you know, scale, you get to develop people around you, you know, to do these different positions. You're teaching the next generation to do it, whether maybe they're the ones that buy it from you or something like that, if that's what you want to do. But it will sell, it will end. It always comes to an end at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know how I got into this, Brian? This is funny because a friend of mine based over in Colorado, and we were talking about him, and he didn't ask me about me selling my company, even though he knew I did. And I said to him, so what are your plans? He goes, oh, well, I've got to look to retire in 2 more years and so on. And this is a multi-million dollar company in the tech space. And his retirement plan was to shut the door, turn the lights out and shut the door and lock the door.
Right.
Oh my goodness. The good news is I've worked with him now and he sold his company. He had a 2-year workout and it's fantastic, right? So now he has that quality of lifestyle that he has. But this is what got me into this was because there's so many leaders out there who have worked so many years and they just haven't built it into what I call the asset box rather than just a job. And once they start building it as an asset and thinking, do you know what? This is worth something. It's worth something if you make it right.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and you need to work towards that, right? I mean, like you said, I mean, your friends, I mean, shutting the doors and telling all the employees to go home. I mean, that's, you know, that's an abrupt end, you know? I mean, it's just.
Yeah, it really is.
Built all this, you know, you've built this business over all these years. You should get value out of it, you know, whether it's just, frankly, it's your retirement plan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, listen, I want to just ask you this one more question about this before I've got a bit of a loaded question for you to wrap this up with, Brian, because there's so much, there's so much more we could be talking about. But yeah, the tech space is constantly evolving. It's always evolving, right? That's the beauty about tech. And, you know, it's usually steady growth, but predominantly it's always exponential growth. It's always changing. So what seismic shifts do you see coming down the turnpike from where you're based, from your perspective? What seismic shifts are you seeing coming into the MSP space? And how are you prepping for that as a company?
Yeah, so I think one of the seismic shifts, it's happening. It's been happening over the number of years. But as software as a service applications, they're just a lot much more resilient. And, you know, they're much more stable. So you don't have the issues of that in the past. More things are moving to the cloud, more things are, you know, of service. So infrastructure is slowly starting to fade away from the standpoint of, like, you know, turning the screwdrivers and doing all that stuff. So what you know, the way we're seeing it is we need to get more into the business operation side of it. You know, how do you visualize data? How do you use data? I think one of the things that we're going to see in the industry too, people talk about AI, but they're foundationally not set up to actually use AI. Now they'll use generative AI tools, right? You know, as a ancillary things, Copilot, and you know, some of their core applications might, but they a lot of time have all this data in all these disparate systems that they need to, especially large organizations, legacy data, all this stuff that they've used HR, and they're all in these disparate systems. They don't have a really good, I hate the word, but like data lakes or some like kind of, they can actually use it. So I think there's going to be a shift over the next few years of really setting up foundations of getting data organized that we can actually use AI very effectively, like machine learning, all those different ones. And I think too, from this, you know, a third area is compliance. I think there are many regulations that are coming down. The simplest one is cyber insurance. The application is getting more arduous. You know, the insurance companies are becoming smarter and smarter. They're asking better questions. The forms are getting much longer. They're wanting evidence of all that stuff. So just cyber insurance went on the lowest level. I think with like CMMC for the DoD contractors coming down, I think I can see in the near future, whatever that might be, that these regulations go not just from the Department of Defense contractors, but proliferate through all the government entities, state, local governments. And it's really a good thing from that standpoint. But understanding compliancy, having all your policies and procedures in place, disaster recovery, business continuity, I think all of that area is going to be a growth area over the next several years.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that's a great word of warning to everybody that's listening out here is like compliance is not coming down the plan bike. It's already knocking on the back door. It's really knocking on your back door now. And you got to start making sure you have everything right where it should be and where it needs to be. You know, otherwise you're going to get yourself in trouble.
You will.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Brian, I've got one more loaded question for you. And I always ask my guests this loaded question. You know, it's like that. So obviously, but you've had tremendous success. You've taken a company that was underwater to a very successful company where it is. You know, knowing what you know now, all right, as Brian Schroll, knowing what you know now, what one singular piece of advice, you know, bearing in mind you've had business success, you've had lifestyle success, you've had all of these things. What piece of advice would you give the younger Brian Strong? If you had to give one piece of advice to young Brian, what would it be?
To the younger Brian, that's a really fantastic question. You know, I think be more aggressive. You know, take bigger risks, especially when you're younger. You have lots of time to recover. And so it's one of those that you don't learn by sitting still. And so I think I could have moved. I was like, move faster. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I think there's a lot of, even though we live in a world of instant gratification, you know, the world has changed dramatically, and we can work smarter, but, you know, not in replacement of working harder. I think that's the key point there, really. You can work smarter, but it isn't a replacement for working harder. You still need to push the boulder first and be aggressive and work hard to get to it. Once you've got that, yeah, by all means, find ways to make it a lot easier.
That's right.
But it's not a replacement for it. It's not, hey, let me just sit back because it's going to come to me. Success exactly doesn't right. just come, right?
That's exactly right. You have to force your way through. I mean, you know, there's a lot of arguments out there to be a little bit more disagreeable, right?
Exactly. Well, listen, Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure and honor to have you. You've shared so much with us today. If people want to get hold of you, what's the best way of getting hold of you?
Yeah, I mean, you can email me at brian.strong@tinhats.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. That's a great place. And then, tinhats.com is our website.
Well, I'll make sure I put those links in the show notes so people can just click straight on it if they want to get hold of you. But it's been, thank you so much, you know, from the bottom of my heart of sharing this insight. As I said, if time wasn't an issue, we'd continue talking because there's so much, you know, you're so open and so sharing with it. You know, so I'm really, really grateful for you. So thank you very much, Brian, for joining us. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us as well. It's been a tremendous, I've got so much out of this, just as you have. And if you have picked up one bit of insight or one nugget, please make sure you comment, make sure you like, make sure you subscribe, but more importantly, make sure you share. This is a community to help us all grow. And if you've got something out of Mike Bryan today and you think that someone else might benefit from something that Bryan said, then please, please make sure you share. So again, thank you very much, Bryan, for joining us. Thank you for joining us. And until the next episode, goodbye, take care, and we'll see you all soon. Bye-bye.